There'll be some that will choose not to play, I think, and how we deal with those is really important as an industry because we have to be empathetic and supportive. I have a deeper theory than that. There were some that chose not to play round one and we just didn't hear about it. So it's going to be one of those stories we'll hear through the window, no question.
Craig Hutchison on Footy Classified last night just threw that out there as a little aside. He thinks there might have been players that didn't want to play in round one and didn't play. Sam Edmund, SEN's chief reporter, has been good enough to join me and chase that one for Illusion Gas Log Fires, clearing all current stock right now. IllusionFires.com. It was a pretty good show, Footy Classified last night. Plenty of fodder to think about, but that was just a little sneaky one. Hutchie crept in. Now, welcome to you, Sam.
Little sneaky uppercut, wasn't it, Dwayne? Yeah. Good afternoon, too. Yeah, there was all sorts of nuggets. If you were panning for gold last night, you would have come out with a bounty, wouldn't you? But if that's the case, then we wouldn't and we shouldn't begrudge them, would we?
No.
Because we've had all sorts of different reactions, Dwayne, to the hub concept from players, coaches and officials. Not everyone is on board with that, given the potential time spent away from family and accommodation arrangements and proximity and all that sort of stuff. But we never really stopped to think, what about the actual keenness of getting out on the ground? I mean, we assume they will be. Everything we hear is they will be. But what if some are not? And many players didn't get to the so-called line in round one, while others who were slated to play were ruled out later in the week. So I don't think we should just assume that 800-odd different personalities are going to be aligned with going out there and playing in the middle of a pandemic.
So did anyone not play round one because of the pandemic, said, no, I refuse to play or I don't want to play or I don't feel safe playing?
Not that I have been able to establish, Dwayne, in this short period of time, but that's certainly not to say it's not the case. In fact, you'd probably say it's likely to be the case. I mean, if players were to speak honestly, you'd be shocked if you had, as I say, 800 in unison with it. And I actually suspect many fans will be similar as well. I don't think, and it's unlikely that fans will be allowed in, unfortunately, this year, but should they be, I don't think we'll have 100% approval rating on that either. I mean, there's a recent poll in the US by Seton Hall University that stated, and take this with a grain of salt, but stated 72% of Americans wouldn't attend live sport again until a vaccine was found. So that's in a sports-loving country like the States as well. I mean, would you feel comfortable just rocking in round 15, Dwayne, thinking you'll be fine?
Well, a vaccine is one thing. Koshy was talking about something to make the symptoms a little less deadly. But what if we don't have a vaccine for 20 years? So we don't have crowds at footy games for 20 years. That's there are so many questions, Sam. We don't know 100% whether we'll get a vaccine in 12 months' time. I can see sport played in this country in the last half of this year. All the big sports with no crowds. I can see. Well, I spoke to Mark Scaife yesterday about V8 supercars. I had a chat to him, and he seemed fairly confident that the V8s will be up and running, you know, in the last half of the year. So you'll have NRL, you'll have the A-League, you'll have the NBL, you'll have the AFL, everybody up and running in the last half of the year. But I think everyone's just getting ready for no crowds. But how long that lasts for might be until we get a vaccine. It might not if we get something that at least stops it from being a deadly virus. If we can stop it from being a deadly virus, then it won't be so bad, obviously.
Yeah, I think what's more likely to happen is, Dwayne, is it burns itself out to some degree and we do get sport back without spectators and fans. But, I mean, that's domestically. I reckon the international sports and events are in a heap more trouble. I mean, the T20 World Cup sounding more unlikely by the day. The international events like the Australian Open is a watching brief as well, and the Summer of Cycling, all these events that attract international spectators, international participants and athletes, there'd be a huge question mark on those because we know that the travel aspect of the coronavirus will be the last hurdle to clear.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The Men's T20 Cricket World Cup in extreme doubt at the moment if we don't open our international borders. International rugby, I was talking about earlier, six-week rugby championship they're talking about later this year. But, you know, I'd rather talk about the kind of good things that are going to maybe happen as opposed to how the worst-case scenario for sport in this country is we just don't have any international sport for 12 months. We only have the domestic sport. And do we have a T20, a domestic Big Bash season with just domestic players? Do we have an NBL season with just domestic players? They're the things that those sports are going to face. A-League right now, is it just going to be domestic players when we resume? Or do we give some exemptions for players coming from overseas that are prepared to stay in quarantine for their full 12-day lockdown?
And I think just coming back to the T20 World Cup, should it not go ahead? I mean, that suddenly frees up the MCG, doesn't it? So all this talk about hubs and where grand finals could be played, well, the MCG could suddenly be free well into November, December. So, I mean, all these things are up in the air, Dwayne. And I know we've got our domestic cricket comp as well, but the T20 kickoff at the MCG, I think, was slated for October 25. So should that event not go ahead, it buys the MCG some more time to host football as well.
Yeah, and the Adelaide Oval and Optus Stadium in Perth and maybe even the SCG. So,
yep.
Yeah, watch this space. What else have you got for me, Sam, before you knock off for the day? You've had a big day, starting with the boys on breakfast.
Yeah, well, the AFLPA have got a big day too, Dwayne. They've got their phone hook up this afternoon with the AFL player agents. Now, the agents are not sure how much clarity they will get here, if any, from the PA around their principal concern, Dwayne, which is player contracts and how they will be affected, and principally around the existing deals to some big, big-name players who have just re-signed. Do they cop a little discount, or do they have to have a full-scale renegotiation? Or as harsh as it sounds, Dwayne, given list sizes are a chance to be cut, do privileges, as they're seen to be, like Category B rookies, Category A rookies, go, and you therefore free up a few hundred thousand dollars per club and potentially $5 to $8 million across the competition? And given list cuts could happen, that would help the state comps as well, ensure the talent isn't spread too thin. But a more radical concept, Dwayne, doing the rounds, I know you like a radical idea. What if teams have the same salary cap, even if it comes back to around $12 million, but list sizes can differ more from club to club? So if you want to pay a bigger slice of the pie to a few players, then go for it. Or if you want to spread the coin more evenly across a greater number of players, then that's your business as well. And instead of having a one or two player difference per list, or three, you potentially have 8-10 players difference on a list, depending on how you want to splash the cash.
Yeah, well, different clubs will have a different amount of players as well, Sam, committed for 2021. So one club out of their list of 40 might have 30 guys of that 40 or 25 of that 40 locked in for 2021 on a contract. So,
which is the case.
Contract, if that contract has to stand, then they have to keep that player on the list. Unless they cut that player and pay him anyway, which is going to be severely hampering their salary cap if they did that. So, yeah, that's the exact situation that we're going to face. You raise a good point, because list sizes might be determined for a club by how many players they've got locked in for the 2021 season, and whether we get a situation where contracts are reduced so dramatically because the salary cap's reduced so dramatically that some players are simply, you know, paid out or knocked on the head and they take their 50% and walk away, especially if they're, you know, mature players who might be at the end. So many things to talk about, so little time, Sam. Great to have you on. I appreciate you joining me, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Sam Ebbin, SEN Chief Reporter. Illusion Gas Log Fires, clearing all current stock right now. Brett Phillips is about to join me. Peter in Primby, before we talk to Brett Phillips about some tennis. Welcome to you, Peter.
Welcome, Dwayne. Thanks for that. I was just wondering, like, you're talking about the international cricket and whatever team mightn't come out of you. How about the Sheffield Shield takes a bit of prominence and have a Boxing Day Sheffield Shield match?
I tell you, there would be people that would love to have actual domestic cricket re-injected into mainstream sport, because it's been a backburner sport for such a long time, Peter. It might actually come back and be watched. I'm not sure if it will, but you know, some of the guys that we should be appreciating more that we don't get to appreciate because it's not on our box, Sheffield Shield cricket might get some prominence. But the hard part I see, Peter, is in the second half of the year, you're going to have so many different sports on the telly. The NRL might still be going. The AFL might still be going. The A-League's going to restart. The NBL's going to restart. The V8s will be going. And you've got cricket as well. So you're going to have a situation, Spring Carnival's going to be up and running, where there might not be a lot of space for Sheffield Shield to get a look in anyway. I really appreciate your thoughts, though, Peter. Thanks for joining from New South Wales. We need to take a break. Brett Phillips to talk some tennis. And after the 2 o'clock news, Matt Rendell is going to join me. I'll play you a piece of Mick Turner from last week, talent manager and the boss of the Geelong Falcons, talking about his list of players right now might be the best draft group that he's ever had, and how he'd be disappointed if we didn't get a little under-18 championship at the end of this year and get some sort of draft. And we'll play a little bit of Luke Beveridge saying we should raise the draft age, which I disagree with, on Gerard Waitley this morning. You're with Dwayne's World.